Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Here on VSiN and DraftKings Network is the Sunday pregame power-up rolls on. No better way to get set for a full slate of games. Three shows, 5 hours every Sunday morning throughout the NFL season. Alongside former NFL executive Michael Lombardi, I'm Stormy Bonantoni. Excited to get this day underway. Our guy Elliot Bowman behind the glass making everything go. And Michael, before we get into the nitty-gritty of the NFL slate, I have a very important question for you.
Yeah.
How many shots of espresso in a coffee are too many? Because I have five in mind today, and I think that it might be getting excessive.
Yeah, I think you've probably gone overboard here. There's no question about that. But look, you got to fight your way through it. You got in late, you know, you're pulling double duty. You don't get a day off. You're traveling on Friday doing games. I mean, so look, sometimes you just gotta do what you have to do to get through the moment. I mean, as the great Magic Johnson once said to Bob McAdoo, do gotta do what do gotta do.
There we go. The mid-afternoon nap before the evening games that are gonna feel pretty good, yeah. I think, later on for me.
Well, you'll doze off. I mean, you know, some of these 1 o'clock games might put you to sleep. I mean, I think. And you'll get ready for the afternoon slate, and you'll watch that Jets Buffalo game fully alert and ready to go. I think that'll be exciting.
We can only hope that game can keep us awake. I mean, the turnovers, if anything, will certainly keep us on our toes. But go ahead.
You know, the hard part about Sundays now is figuring out how you maneuver your YouTube TV, the four games you want to watch, or the put in the window. You're really just you're watching it. And then the game that you'll get in your home local, like today and here in Philadelphia, we get Cleveland-Pittsburgh, and we get Washington, the Giants. So I don't really need to see that when I watch that on tape. And, you know, will I put Cleveland-Pittsburgh? I think that might put you to sleep if you watch that one. So I might have a doubleheader of just four games from DirecTV on both televisions.
What I get frustrated with, Michael, as a bettor and as a fan too, for like if it's, for example, the San Francisco 49ers last week on the local, because the game was no longer competitive against the Jags, they swapped the games. And as bettors, you know, there are certain things that we're sweating out. We want to get dialed in. So then we got to like recalibrate and figure out how we can get the game. So that's the thing that's been like driving me crazy so far on YouTube TV and these local channels. But
you know what drives me crazy too, Stormy, is the fact that local TV is behind the stream. Like sometimes when I have when they did what they did against San Francisco and Jacksonville, and they put another game on, and it happens to be one that's kind of there that you're streaming on the YouTube, I'm actually a play ahead of it than I was basically with the network feed.
And the stream's already behind.
Figure it out.
That's crazy.
I can't figure it out. Yeah, I can't figure it out.
Live betting nightmare, but we will forge on. Just wait for the commercial breaks. That's what I always say. If you're live betting some of these games, just wait for the commercials. You'll get set from that standpoint. And let's get into it because we've got a fun one on this week 11 slate. Let's get you with some quarterback need to know information. Obviously, we learned earlier in the week, no Deshaun Watson for the remainder of the season. He has season ending shoulder surgery. So Brown Steelers, we're going to see our guy Dorian Thompson-Robinson today instead of PJ Walker, which was another kind of secondary interesting development with that game. Justin Fields is back for the Bears against the Lions today, and Matthew Stafford also set to return against Seattle. This last one doesn't impact today, Michael, with Atlanta on a bye, but we did get the news that Desmond Ridder is going to start for Atlanta against the Saints next week and moving forward, which I found interesting.
Yeah, I didn't understand why he got benched. I mean, the media was killing him, but his numbers weren't bad. He turned the ball over fumbles. I mean, the three fumbles in the win against Tampa was tough to take. But he didn't play poorly. I mean, Taylor Heinicke, he turned the ball over too. You know, and last week against an Arizona Cardinal team, which I thought you and I both agreed on, that Atlanta should be able to throw the ball effectively. I mean, they've been drafting skill players for 125 years. I mean, they've got all these number one picks. They're getting A's in every single draft because they take receivers and they throw for 70 yards against the worst pass defense in the NFL. I didn't get that. I think that's the right look. You spent all offseason telling us that Ridder's your best guy, and then you flip like that? To me, that was panic. It's the same thing with Dorian Thompson-Robinson, right? It's exactly the same thing. They spent this summer saying, we are going to go with DTR, right? We're going to go with him, and we're going to trade Dobbs because we believe in him. And then after one start, you don't believe in him anymore, and you go to PJ Walker, who doesn't even know the offense.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing is they clearly liked what they saw in preseason. They like what they know about the young man. He's got a lot of unique tools that are things that you want in a quarterback in the National Football League. So I'm excited to see him today. And as for the Ridder stuff, the report from James Palmer really cemented what you just said, that the Falcons as a whole like believe that Ridder's issues are correctable things. And if Taylor Heinicke went on a ridiculous run, that's probably the only way that he would have stayed in as starter, because they just kind of needed a little bit of a reset and maybe a little bit of a reality check for Desmond Ridder too. Other big names to be aware of today: Justin Jefferson is going to remain out for Minnesota. No Minka Fitzpatrick either for the Steelers, and no Damian Pierce for Houston. Some teams are getting guys back today though, which is positive. Running back Devon Achane making his return from injured reserve for Miami. Great timing as well, because Raheem Mostert's been a little bit dinged up. Chargers wide receiver Keenan Allen will play despite a shoulder injury. Jets wide receiver Garrett Wilson listed as questionable with an elbow issue, but he's expected to go against the Bills. Tyler Lockett expected to play against the Rams despite dealing with a hamstring, and the Bears activated Khalil Herbert from injured reserve, and Deontay Foreman is questionable with an ankle but expected to play. Whew, you can go now. So now that I've just fully ran out of breath.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of things to talk about. Justin Fields' return, I want to hit on that. Femi said something yesterday, almost drove me off the seat. He said, I'm a fan of Justin Fields. I said, Femi, how can you be a fan of Justin Fields? You're a better. He's 9-20-1 against the spread in his career. Just because he's coming back doesn't mean it's going to be good. 9-20-1 as the quarterback. He and Mac Jones are in the same category in terms of not being able to cover. That line is interesting. You know, when you come in, when you wake up on a Sunday morning, you always expect some form of line movement, and that line opened at 10. It shot all the way down to 7.5, never got to 7 that I saw, and now it's back up to 8 again. So at what point do the Bears not become attractive, Stormy, and at what point do the Lions? I think we saw that at 7.5. I think we saw the resistance hit in that point there and come through. Remember the last time these two teams played, it was 41-10. Fields ran the ball for 150 plus yards, but only threw for 70 against them. And the game was over rather quickly.
In terms of numerical value for you, Michael, what is the difference between Tyson Bagent and Justin Fields? Because it's not like, I mean, Fields is obviously the better tools overall, but it's not like he's that's impacted winning games for the Bears.
No, when you look at the success rate, I mean, Bagent, and when you just go to the success rate of quarterbacks, which is what you do on first, second, and third down, Bagent's in the low 50s, which is really good. Fields is at the bottom of the pack. He's in the low 30s. I mean, his consistency of success rate, and that's something you have to look at every week, because what happens to you, you'll get lured into thinking the quarterback's better. Will Levis, for example, you know, he has the really good game, you know, where he's throwing the deep ball, making plays. But over the last 3 weeks, his success rate on down after down after down has been problematic. He did it against Atlanta, not so good in the next coming weeks. So I think that's really important. And look, Bagent turns the ball over, there's no question. But today, I think for the most part, if you're betting the Bears, you're saying they're the healthiest they've been all year. They've got a really good run defense. They got the Lions will struggle to run the ball, and they're going to have to turn the ball over to gain extra possessions. And let's face it, Fields, who does turn the ball over at a high rate, can't turn the ball over. You know, Fields is, when in all Fields is 6 wins as an NFL starter. The field wins have come when the opponents have scored 20 points or less. So he doesn't win games when it becomes a little bit of a shootout, because there's too much opportunity to make a mistake. So when the defense plays really well, that's when they have a chance to win. Now, do you feel like they can win? Look, they've only given up 56.4 yards per game this season. They're really good, but they're just not a good road team, and it's going to be hard. They've only forced 9 turnovers all year, and their defense is built on turning the ball over.
So, Michael, that game is one of 6 today that have a favorite in the game that is over a touchdown. So 8-point spread there. Bills-Jets 8-point spread. Commanders laying 9.5 against the Giants. 49ers laying 12 against the Bucks. Dolphins 13.5-point favorites against Vegas. And Dallas laying 10.5 in Carolina against the Panthers. There is always one that messes everything up and loses outright. Who's going to mess up the money line parlays for people today?
Well, I mean, you would think on paper, right? Chicago has a really good chance. Detroit's flying high. We know Detroit struggles with movement quarterbacks. Go back to the Lamar game. Now, Lamar threw the ball really well in that game. So, you know, we'll see if that can happen. On the road, I think that's the problem, right? I think, you know, you're talking about a road team. The Raiders, for example, how can they left yesterday morning. This is a 10 a.m. start for them, right? And Miami's coming off a rest, and they've got plenty of time to game plan, and they're healthy at now. I think that's a hard game for the Raiders. San Francisco, the line has gone dramatically in their favor since it was 11.5, and it just keeps moving way up. And I think people are willing to keep taking it to 14, you know, and I think that's going to be the issue there. Dallas doesn't play well on the road. Let me just say that. Now, do I think Carolina upsets them? No, I don't. I really don't. I don't think Carolina has enough. And there was some talk this week that because Bryce Young missed practice, that there was an opportunity for him. The other game is, and I don't know if you mentioned it, the Jets are now at 8 or 7.5. I mean, that might be the only one that you could say, okay, if they turn this over, they got a chance to win the game.
That's the one where you look at that spread and you're like, I have to stay away from this game because neither one of these teams are reliable in any way, shape, or form at this point in the season. Like that.
No, but here's what you would say, though, Stormy. If you want to take it, I know we got to go to break. Josh Allen's got 45 career NFL wins. 60 NFL career wins. 45 have come by more than 7 points.
Yes, that is a good note, but the Jets have given them problems, and we saw that even week one of this season. We're going to get to that game and every single one on this NFL Sunday, week 11 state, starting next block. Don't go anywhere. We're breaking it all down here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
With so many games on the board, there's no better time to put the VSiN experts to work for you. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. You'll get access to our daily best bets with the leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand, betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game, plus betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video access. Sign up today and get your first 30 days for only $19. You'll see everything VSiN has to up your betting game. VSiN.com/subscribe is where you can do it. Alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you as we are going through each and every game on this NFL Sunday week 11 slate. And we're going to start with a fun one. The Pittsburgh Steelers in Cleveland taking on the Deshaun Watson-less Browns. We got Dorian Thompson-Robinson in there, Michael. And when we talked earlier this week about this game, the anticipation was that we were going to see a line flip in this spot. Cleveland opened a 4.5-point favorite. It got down all the way to as low as 1, but then started ticking back up. And we see the Browns laying 2 right now. Also, as for the total, it has been solid one-way traffic to the under, now sitting at 33 from the opener of 38.5. This is the lowest total you're going to see this week and nearly the last decade. Saints Browns last year, last December, had 32.5. But in the last 10 years, these are the two lowest totals you'll see.
You know, there's so many trends in this game, right? Look, the fact that Deshaun's not playing, I don't think it deters the ugliness of how this game typically is going to go, right? I mean, Thompson Robinson, he can't play like he did in the game against Baltimore where he threw 3 interceptions. He averaged 3.5 yards per attempt, and he had 6 first downs total and really cost them the game. Baltimore got in front. But this is a Pittsburgh team that, you know, they're like Joe Frazier, the boxer. They love to get in a slugfest, right? They love to be in the, you know, take punches and give punches out and get bruised, and they never get deterred. I mean, think about this, Stormy. Dating back to 2021, Pittsburgh is 21-7-1 in one-score games. They're 9-0 in the last 9 one-score games, and they're 11-1 over the last 12 one-score games. But here's what makes it even more fascinating is when we talk about these divisional matchups, right? Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh, Baltimore. The dogs are really, you know, that's where they make their money. They're 69. If you just bet the dogs straight out and don't care about the teams and don't care about who's playing quarterback, you're 69-47-3 in this NFC North with the dogs. So now Pittsburgh was it looked like I thought Pittsburgh would become the favorite in the game, and yet there's a lot of action coming in on Cleveland. They'll get Jones back. They're starting left tackle, or if they move him to right, which helps. So now they're not playing two backup tackles, which against Pittsburgh is dangerous because of their ability to rush with Highsmith and J.J. Watt. So, but I don't know how Pittsburgh moves the ball, but I ask this every week, like, how does Pittsburgh win the game? And I can't wrap it around in my head. Last time they played, Pittsburgh ran for 55 yards.
Well, yeah, Michael, they were an underdog. Speaking of like the underdogs being the statistical winners overall, when we see this in the AFC North, last time these two met, Steelers were a dog and they won 26-22, but an estimated 21 of those points were due to defensive turnovers over three fumble recoveries and a pick six on the opening drive, according to True Media. Now, I've got some great numbers for you. You're going to love this because we talk all the time about how the posters need to be up here at Circa, where I'm broadcasting from, for Kevin O'Connell being the luckiest guy in the NFL. Let's replace those with Mike Tomlin stat, because you do not want that man and you do not want anybody from the Pittsburgh Steelers in this building with the luck that they have. They have been outgained every game this season. Net yardage minus 865. They have been outscored 182 points to 156. Their rate of offensive drives that result in three and outs, Michael, 43%. Only the Giants have been worse. They have trailed by an average of 4 points heading into the fourth quarter every game this season, but have a 6-3 record. And now they get to play Dorian Thompson-Robinson instead of Deshaun Watson next week against the Bengals. They don't have to face Joe Burrow. Like, the luck is insane for this team right now.
Yeah, it really is. And if you bet the over, which a lot of people did, bet the over, you couldn't understand how they were going to get over. You know, now remember last year, they were on a hell of a run at the end of the year. They get better as the year goes on. In the last two games, Stormy, just think about this. The last two games, they ran the ball for 375 yards combined. And it was the first time all season that they gained over 20 first downs in each of those games. The first time they've gotten 20 first downs. Their 26 points they scored against Cleveland in week two, results of defensive turnovers too, by the way, was still the most points they've scored all season. And the four turnovers they got in that game were the most turnovers they got in this one. But here's where, you know, you're right. This is a left-right brain game for me, right? The left side of my brain says you can't go against Tomlin. And here's why. Because he just has this unique ability to win these close games. And you can't figure out on paper or visually how it happens, but it does. And then the right side of my brain says, wait a minute, they don't have Minkah Fitzpatrick. He's a signal caller. They've lost Quan Alexander. They've lost Kelly Holcomb. Both their signal callers are not as good as they were defensively. And the Browns, whatever you think about DTR, they can run the football. They proved it last week in Baltimore, running the ball with two backup tackles. So, you know, if they can run the ball on Pittsburgh and keep the game close and get it to the fourth quarter, can they win a one-possession game? I mean, this is where it's going to go. And if, I mean, it's going to go to a one-possession game.
And I was going to say, and if that's how things play out, then I have faith in the Steelers in the fourth quarter. Late-game heroics have been their thing this year. I mentioned their three-and-out rate, how bad it's been. Well, in the fourth quarter, they're converting third downs at the third highest rate in the NFL. The Steelers also in the fourth quarter lead the league in havoc rate. So that's number of plays that end in a tackle for loss, a forced fumble, an interception, a pass breakup, a sack, any of those things. That the fourth quarter is where they thrive, despite entering the fourth quarter down in the majority of their games. So I think a good angle in this game is maybe see if they are trailing, but it's a close game, how many plus points you can get live in this game going into the fourth quarter, or even as a teasable option, if you think it's going to be a close game, they're getting two, but tease that up to eight. I think that's a really smart way to approach this game also.
Right. And I think the other smart way to approach the game is the first quarter, right? So we know the unders are very low total. We know that, right? But you got to see where Kevin Stefanski is going with, he's going to go with DTR. Is he going to, you know, try to do what he did in the first? Look, they ran for 198 yards against Pittsburgh in the first game. Now, remember, Nick Chubb was there. He got hurt in this game in week two. But then they brought Ford in. He made the long run. Remember that? And they were getting going. But they didn't have, they did not have their best defensive run player in Cam Hayward on the field on that day. So that could be a little misleading. I think you got to see how the game going. If this is an 8-possession game, which I think it really will be, you know, the Steelers had 14 possessions in the first game. The Browns had 15. But I think this is going to be an 8-possession game, because of the way they're going to both try to run the ball, chew up clock, win ugly.
This is a game that I am weirdly excited about. Now I'm not, for the last, we've only got a couple minutes here left in this block, so I know I didn't give you nearly enough time to talk about the Chargers defense, but here we go. Chargers lay in three in Green Bay, taking on the Packers, total 44. Packers offense did look better last week against the Steelers defense, which was a surprise and pretty impressive here. What do you make of this game?
Well, this is a line that hasn't moved all week. And it's one of those lines that when you look at it on Monday, you say, oh, I got to take the Chargers. I got to take the Chargers, right? You know, I mean, even though they're a road favorite, you got to take them. Packers have lost five of the last six games. They've scored 16.5 points. They've allowed 20. They finally got their offense going a little bit. Now, the Packers are the reverse of the Steelers. They're 1-4 in games decided by 7 points or less. And the Packers' consistency of throwing the football isn't there, right? So they haven't thrown for over 300 yards all season. And their defense, for whatever reason it is, they can't stop a run. They've had three games this year where they've given up over 200 yards rushing, you know, and you can't do that, you know. So, and the other problem is they play from behind. They've only scored 49 points in the first half. That's 5.5 points on average. He's playing from behind in every game. And his expected completion percentage, Jordan Love we're talking about, is one of the highest. It's the second highest in the league. And he's has the most highest aggressive average of trying to force the ball into tight coverage. So this is one where you say the Chargers should win this game, but it's the Chargers. Mm. And you can, how can you trust Staley in a close game? This is one where if Staley doesn't win this one today, right, if he doesn't win this one today, and, you know, with the ability to pull as a favorite, then to me, I think it's over with. I think the Chargers fold like a cheap tent. But look, I think the reality of it is they can't blow anybody out. The Chargers have been, I mean, Herbert's 2-7 in his last 2-7-1 in his last 10 games as a favorite.
I've gone back and forth on this game all week, and I ended up landing on playing the Chargers in the contest, and I really hope that I don't regret it, but it's more so just what the Mike Somich thought process was earlier this week of a fade of Green Bay than it is a play on Los Angeles, because obviously we don't trust them. We typically love a home underdog, but I can't trust Green Bay either. Yeah. And looking at their most recent ATS numbers, they're 1-5 against the spread their last six games. You mentioned the Chargers and Staley need to get this done and need to have a good performance. I know need to doesn't always mean have to, but that's what I'm counting on today. I didn't put this as a bet in my bet slip, but it is a contest play for me this week. So again, hopefully I don't live to regret it, because Brandon Staley tends to make me do that more often than unfortunately.
Many of people do that, yes.
We're going to take a quick time out here. When we return, we will discuss the Justin Fields return. He's in Detroit coming up this week. That's going to be a big one in determining things today. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Before you make your next bet, be sure to visit vsin.com and check out the current betting splits data. Want to know where the money and bets are moving every game? The betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes, so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public's betting based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits, another way vsin is here to make you a more informed, better year round. You can check out those betting splits for every game at vsin.com. Thanks for hanging out with us here on the Lombardi Line. We're coming to you from Coast to Coast. Our guy Michael Lombardi out there at his office in Jersey. Stormy Bonantoni here in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino, where the sportsbook behind me is going to be popping in just a couple of hours here, Michael. I want to get into a couple of games that I have involved in a teaser and get your opinion on them. Going to start with the Detroit Lions. I brought them down to under a field goal against the Bears. I know we talked about this game a little bit at the start of the show. Justin Fields making his return, hasn't played since week six with that dislocated thumb, had trouble gripping the football. He is expected to be back. How do you evaluate things? How's this one going to play out?
Well, this is the first time, I think, all year that the Bears have been completely healthy as a football team, offensively and defensively. Their front seven, you know, as I've mentioned before, they can play the run. They're very effective against the run. They've done a nice job in that area. The problem is their offense has struggled. Now, they're healthy. Herbert came back off of it. I think Foreman was injured, but he's still going to play. I think that's going to be critical. Look, you're not going to be able to run the football effectively against the Lions. The Lions are really physical up front, and they play the run at home very well. Now, Fields could maybe run the ball with his feet, but just the general run game is going to be challenging. They're going to put the ball in Fields' hands to see if he can prevent turnovers, if he's going to protect the football, something that he hasn't really been able to do throughout his career, whether it's been interceptions or fumbles. You know, this year he's got three fumbles, and one of them cost him the game, and it's been difficult for him to protect the football. So for me, this is really going to come down to, can he make plays in the passing game? Is he able to throw the ball effectively in the passing game down the field? And can they protect him against the rush? The Lions can, even though the Bears are so good at protecting the run, the Lions can throw the ball. So they're going to be able to make plays. They've got to be able to rush Goff, get him off his spot. I believe it's a close game. I really do. But that fourth quarter worries me, because that's when the turnovers seem to happen for the Bears offense.
Yeah, I look at this number and I feel like if I had to make a bet on the spread where it sits right now, I would probably lean to taking the eight with the Bears in this spot. But I like the Lions a lot, and I think they're going to win this game. And if it is a close game, I think that they're going to win by a field goal or more in that range. So that's why I tease them down, despite all of the covering numbers that tell us the Lions are going to have no problem covering this number right there against the division. They have covered 11 straight. They are 5-0 against teams ATS that are under 500 at this point. The Goff Campbell duo, Michael, together 27-11 ATS. They're hitting at a 71% clip. So the Lions are a good cover team. I just feel like this number might be a little bit too high because I don't necessarily know what I'm going to get out of Justin Fields and this offense on Chicago. But so right.
When they protect the ball, they have a chance to win. When they don't, and it's easier said than done. And like I said, when they can hold their opponent to under 20 points, they have a chance to win. Because, you know, I know what they did in Washington on Thursday night, but that's not typical of who the Bears are. I mean, look, the most profitable team to bet against, and just put this out there now, in the last 5 years, the most profitable team to bet against are the Chicago Bears. You're making a fortune if you're betting against them, you know. And Fields, and I know Femi said he's a fan of them, but I keep bringing this up. Fields has the lowest against the spread percentage in the last 20 years. In the last 20 years, only Colt McCoy at 12-23-1 and Bruce Gretkowski are worse. Think about that.
Yeah, and
and that number at 10, when I saw that Monday morning at 10, I said, oh boy, this looks good. But then, you know, it started moving to everybody saw it the same way. Right. And I hate when everybody sees it the same way.
Right. And I will just follow up with your thoughts on Justin Fields, that the undrafted rookie Tyson Bagent has more wins than Fields this season with the
Bears.
Throw
it in there, Storm. Just might as well. Pile on. It's okay. It's a pile on. It's fine.
So I told you I teased down the Lions. I paired that with the Washington Commanders also getting them under a field goal against the Giants. Michael, I do not think that the Commanders in any way, shape, or form should be favored against anybody by this margin, but that's what we have. So I liked the idea of bringing them down. I did it when it was at the 8.5. So it's at that. So if you want to maybe do a 6.5 so that you can still get below the field goal, that's an approach there. But the Giants are just so bad, Michael. I cannot help but find ways to fade them.
I mean, how can't you? I mean, like, seriously. But here's the thing that cracks me up, right? All these Giant fans that think they're so good. And, you know, just so we're aware of this, I can't research this. I don't know how it is, but a team that only scored 7 points in the last matchup is now favored by 9.5. How is that possible? They scored 7 against them, and Washington was healthy. It wasn't like they had to play their backup quarterback. It wasn't like Jacoby Brissett was in the game. They scored 7 points. They were 1-for-15 on third down against the Giants, and now they're favored by 9.5. Is that 9.5 really all due to Tommy DeVito? Maybe. I don't know. But let me give you some numbers here. The Giants' offense is historically bad. It isn't just bad. It's historically bad. They score an average of 0.9 points in the first quarter. They score an average of 3.3 in the second quarter. They get it going in the third quarter, and they score an average of 3.7. And, oh, by the way, in the fourth quarter, they really become the Rams of 2000 and score 3.9 per game. Like they don't move the ball. And so, the last time they played, there were 18 punts in the game, 18 punts in the 28 possessions. 18 punts, and the Giants were going to put the game away with Tommy DeVito at quarterback. They were running Barkley down the field. And Sweat was on the field and Young were on the field at that time for the Washington Commanders. But Barkley fumbled, remember? And they bring it back down. The Commanders threw it 42 times in the first game, Stormy, and they only had 250 yards. He was sacked 5 times. And like I mentioned before, he was 1 for 15 on third down, and they only averaged 4.1 yards per play. And now they're favored by 9.5.
You think they're going to be able to run the ball?
Yeah, I say, okay, with all that, Lombardi, are you going to take the Giants? Absolutely not. I'm not taking the Giants. I wouldn't touch this game in a million years. There's no chance you get me to take the Giants.
Well, and I love also that you mentioned their first quarter struggles, and even the points that they have scored in the first quarter have only been field goals. They do not have a single first quarter touchdown this season. Remarkably bad. But so I ask you about the Commanders, though. Do you think that they're going to be able to run the football against this defense? Like, they haven't really been trying. Could this be an opportunity to?
No, they won't try. They'll keep calling pass plays, and they won't care if Howell gets killed or they won't care less.
Poor Sam.
Here's what happens in these games. Okay, as bettors, we need to be aware of this. The team, you know, we sit here and say, I'm not going to be mad at Tommy DeVito or criticize him, but that locker room knows when Brian Daboll says we have, you know, he gives us the best chance to win. Every eyebrow in that locker room is raised. They know that. They've watched practice, right? And when something bad goes wrong, like last week against Dallas, right? The game's close. They forced Dallas to punt the first quarter. They get a turnover, right? They're behind 7-0. They get a turnover. They got the ball in field goal range. All of a sudden, Daboll decides he thinks they've got the Sid Gilman Chargers on 4th and 4. Instead of taking the 3 points, he goes for it. Shockingly, they don't get it, right? They could have made it a 7-3 game. People say, well, they're going to need more than 3 points to beat the Cowboys. Well, what happens is psychologically, when you don't get those 3 points, your team goes in the tank. When you don't convert that fourth down, no analytics has emotion built in it. So when they don't get those 3 points and they lost the fourth down, all of a sudden the Giants' body language shrunk and the game was over. The game was over. Football is a game of emotion. Football is a game of momentum, right? And when you take the momentum out of the game because you're looking at your charts, you take it away. The Giants, can they cover this? I don't know, but as soon as DeVito does something wrong, the momentum of that is going to fall apart. That's where you get in trouble. And that's what's why you can't take the Giants.
Get crushed for Caleb? Is that what we're going with?
Look, they got Daniel Jones on the books for $36 million next year. I mean, they had to come out and say that. I mean, our friend Jordan Schultz put it out there that Daboll and Schein, unless something dramatic happens, are safe. Well, why did you have to put dramatic in there? You know, like they said the same thing about Joe Judge, but they didn't qualify it with dramatic, and then he went off the rocker, and then they had to get something done there. Look, this is a bad team. It was a bad team that won 9 games last year. They were just not honest with themselves, right? I mean, think about this, Stormy. When you go through the quarterback's EPA, you know, and you look at average depth per target, which is the quarterback looking down the field to throw the ball, the best quarterback on their team is Tyrod Taylor. He was 27th in EPA. He was 5th in completion percentage. And he was 9th in average, 31st, I'm telling you, 21st in average depth per target. Daniel Jones is 40th, and he's 38th in average depth per target. And right behind him is DeVito. The numbers between him and DeVito are similar.
I feel like I've been beating a dead horse on Daniel Jones. It is insane to me that they got stuck in this hole the way that they did with him, considering the larger sample size. Nobody out there was going to go pay Daniel Jones. Nobody. Who are you competing against? We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
In the NBA, the game can change in an instant, but no matter how the action unfolds, DraftKings Sportsbook has your back. This week, new customers can score $150 instantly in bonus bets just for betting $5 on basketball. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use the code VSIN, that's V-S-I-N. The crown is yours. Continuing to roll along, previewing all the games on the Week 11 NFL slate, let's head out to Houston, where the Texans are hosting the Arizona Cardinals. Michael, they are laying 6 at home. The mayor of Munchkin Land was back last week. I know you were excited. He was running around. I mean, did not show any sense of the ACL injury in his scrambling ability. But he's taken on one of the better stories in the league. C.J. Stroud enters today coming off back-to-back games where he led fourth quarter game-winning drives, threw for over 350 yards. What do you make of this one?
You know, this is a game where Murray changes the dynamics of the Cardinals. Let's be honest. I mean, I don't know why they're playing him, risking the $98 million if he gets injured, but they're doing it, and so that's what they'll do. And I think when you look at Stroud, he's been remarkable. Now, you know, Stroud has, for all what he's done the last 2 weeks, there was a period where he wasn't very good. Right? There are 3 weeks where they beat Atlanta, they lost to Atlanta, they lost to Carolina, they beat New Orleans, and he wasn't really kind of instrumental in winning those games. He didn't throw the ball, but the last 2 weeks he's been just completely dynamic, and obviously you and I don't agree that he should be in the MVP conversation. He's the rookie of the year, no question, but he's made them, and their offense is good. I mean, look, they can't run the ball. Now, last week they ran for 150 yards with Singletary getting 30 carries. But before that, Pierce, you know, we talk about Pierce being inactive. He wasn't very good. I mean, the last 2 weeks, this team's got 54 first downs against the Bucs and the Bengals. You know, in the prior three games, they got 52.
Yeah.
So they've really upped it at. Is it the defenses they're playing against that aren't very good? Probably a little bit of that. Or they've gotten better? Probably a little bit of that. When Stroud's a favorite, he's 0-3. When he's a dog, he's 5-1. So there's a little bit of something to go to. But I think this game comes back to, okay, D'Amico Ryans, San Francisco defensive coordinator against the Arizona Cardinals. What does that look like, and how does Murray react to the scheme? And if you go back to 2021, when Murray played last season, he did not play either game against San Francisco in 22. So you have to go to 21. Both those games, the Cardinals beat him. And he threw for 210 yards in one of them and 274. And here's the key thing. They ran for 163 yards against the 49ers in the second game.
Yeah, and with James Conner being back in the fold, obviously so important to support the quarterback. But I was impressed with what I saw from Kyler Murray, because I went into it thinking that it was going to be a fade of Arizona because Kyler was going to be rusty, and that just was not the case. So getting 5.5, especially considering this game opened 4, I think could be interesting with Arizona, especially given what you mentioned about the Texans in the favorites role. They are not used to being favored in games, and they haven't had any success against the spread when they have been laying a number, at least to this point. I was looking also for an alternate passing yards prop for C.J. Stroud, just because, like, and this is another one of those, it's a pizza money thing. It's not like he's going to throw for 350 again. Like, that's not what I'm saying. But no rookie in NFL history has thrown for 350 plus yards in 3 straight games. He has an opportunity to do so today. And if you did want to have a little money on the action and on history being made, plus 360 for him to go over 325. I couldn't find a 350 number, but that's where it is, at least on DraftKings right now. Let's go out to
Jeff. One quick section. Yeah. I think the reason this line is moving, right, it opened at 4, 4.5, and went to 6. I think the reason it's moving is because there is a lot of popularity in the Houston Texans, how good they've been on offense, right? And then when you layer that over, the Cardinals are the 29th ranked team on defense in the red on third down. They're 22nd in the red zone. You almost have to ask yourself, how does Stroud not have a good game? I mean, the Cardinals allow 7.6 yards per attempt passing. They've given up 18 touchdowns through the air. And so they're not going to stop anybody. But with Murray back, they have a little bit more hope. Here's where, if you take the 6, you're saying the game will be close. And with Murray back, like all Cardinal games have been close, where the Cardinals have lost have been in the fourth quarter, where they've been outscored 90-27. Right? Remember when Dobbs was there and Connor were there, they would get the game to the fourth quarter. They just couldn't win it, and they were getting no points in the fourth. I think if you take in the Cardinals, you're saying Murray will score in the fourth.
Yeah, that's
which is what he did against the Falcons.
That's a really good point, because we did. That's how we were talking about this team, that they were scrappy, that they could get you to the fourth quarter, but then they peter out. Now you have a quarterback that can rally you in those instances. Interesting, the Texans, Michael, one of the top three survivor selections this week. So that one's going to be a sweat. The Commanders actually the most taken with 235 entries. And then the team that we are going to discuss here next, the Jacksonville Jaguars, 33% of the entries on the Jags, who were riding a 5-game win and cover streak before that ugly loss to the 49ers last week. Doug Peterson said in his media availability this week, that was a humbling experience. How do you think they fare this week, laying a touchdown at home against the Tennessee Titans? Because we've talked about Trevor Lawrence and that he's actually better on the road than he is in his home building.
Yeah, and so I went back and really tried to study Lawrence this week and look at, like, what am I missing here? Like, what's going on with this kid? You know, the perception out there is, oh my gosh, he's so much better with Doug. You know, they've got him turned around. And I really looked at it, and I'm not sure that's actually accurate. So he's got 43 career starts in his NFL career. He's only had one game, Stormy, of averaging over 9.13 yards per attempt. He's only had 5 games where he's averaged over 8 yards per attempt. I mean, C.J. Stroud actually averages like 8.5 right now. So put that in perspective. He's had 13 games where he's been over 7 and 23 where he's been below 7. So 53% of his games, he doesn't get the ball down the field. He does not get the ball down the field. His top 10 yards per attempt, he's 5-2. He's 8-2 in those games. He's had 3-23. He had 5-22, and he had 3-21. So, like, there's no consistency here with him throwing the ball up the field. And I think that's the biggest issue. He gets hit a lot. I don't know if he's 100% healthy, right? I don't know if he's 100% healthy in terms of being able to make it. But there's too many inconsistencies in his game. And I think when they play against good fronts and good defenses, it shows up. Now, how does that relate to today? Well, I mean, we know the Titans can't score. They've gone 28 games without scoring over 30 points all season. And we know Levis, the more he's played, the worse he's become. He opens up against Atlanta. He averages 6-2 per attempt. Then he's down to 5-7, and last week he was at 5-1. His percent of completion went from 65% to 56.4 to 48.7, right? And so they've not been able to really get consistency out of him. Not all his fault either. Their offensive line has been a disaster. He's been hit 25 times in 3 games, and he's under pressure 33% of the time. I think it's a lot of points to lay. But I also don't have any faith that Levis can actually be consistent moving the football.
Yeah, the O-line has been bad. And now that there's tape on the rookie, too, the defenses are able to plan for him a little bit better than he was in that first game where he was just living on adrenaline and nobody knew the book on Will Levis at all. Okay, that we'll see. I don't like the 7, like laying the 7 at all. I don't have a bet in this game, but I'm curious for survivor players how comfortable they feel. The Jags have been one of those teams this year. I lost on them to the Texans earlier this year. Last year, they were a massive out for people backing Jacksonville. So that's a scary team in my mind for survivor. Let's hit one more here in this segment, Michael. The Raiders are in Miami taking on the Dolphins. Dolphins offense, a slightly different test than Tommy DeVito and Zach Wilson that this group has seen the last couple of weeks. Do they come down to earth as a 14-point dog this week?
Well, now it's up to 14. I mean, it opened at 11 and it got bet immediately. I mean, I think people looked at this and said, there's just no way. I mean, the reality of the, can this defense match it? When they went into Buffalo earlier in the season and they started at 10 o'clock, they started slow and it went downhill after that. This is going to be a really challenging game for the Raiders because, let's face it, the Raiders are going to have a hard time scoring, being consistent, putting drives together. And with Jalen Ramsey covering Javonte Adams, you know, I think to me, you know, that's going to make it very hard for Aiden O'Connell to throw the football. And then the issue really for as I wrote about on Friday, this Miami defense is a sleeper defense. They're really getting good. And they're healthy and they're bought into the scheme. They know what they're doing. They understand it. And they're going to put a lot of pressure on an offensive line of the Raiders that isn't very good. And that's going to create some turnovers. I don't know how the Raiders match up physically. How do they cover? There is no chance that Pat Graham, the defense coordinator of the Raiders, has one man-to-man coverage on his call sheet. They can't cover any of these guys. They can't. And we know this, right? We know Miami is so good at home. You know, Miami's 37-20-3 since 2016 at home, and that's not with their best teams. They struggle on the road. They struggle on the road, and the Raiders not getting in there till 4 o'clock yesterday with a 1 o'clock kick. I think they're going to, if this game starts slow, it'll mount to really bad for the Raiders.
Yeah, I could see it being kind of similar to the way Miami pulled away against the Carolina Panthers earlier this year, which is going to be bad news bears for the Raiders if that's the case. And also, they get Devon Achane back, huge in the running game as well for Miami. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.